My name is Michaela Jordan Murray from Catskill, New York, and you're listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM.
Tune in Tuesday, July 2nd, live at Hilo in Catskill. Catskill musician Foggy Otis will be there to preview the live music experience show in Windham, Saturday, July 6th. Tune in Foggy Otis on the radio Tuesday, July 2nd at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Neva Wartell of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is Daily News and Weather Report.
Radio broadcast, this I believe.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Evan Sary reports for Spectrum News that Rensselaer County Sheriff Patrick Russo said June 26th his office will continue to partner with Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers for at least another year. Russo officially renewed the 287G agreement between ICE and Rensselaer County, paying for two officers in the department to act as a designated immigration officers. Quote, the 287G program is not making Rensselaer County safer, unquote, said Melanie Trimble of the New York Civil Liberties Union. Quote, it's actually making it less safe because fewer people are willing to cooperate with the police. Other Rensselaer County officials disagreed. Quote, I understand the need for due process, but if due process is they keep on coming out of offending someone again or breaking our laws, then there has to be something more stringent, unquote, said Rensselaer County legislator Michael Stammel. Quote, this gives us an opportunity to know who these individuals are, know where they're going, where they're living, things of that nature, unquote. Read more about this story at the Spectrum News website.
Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. Around 100 people showed up for the June 20th Chatham Town Board meeting. The crowd was so large, the gathering was moved from Town Hall to the East Chatham Firehouse. Most of those in attendance were there to attack the town's new zoning law. Board members acknowledged that the proposed zoning law was not perfect, but said the existing regulations from the 1970s needed updating. Board member Michael Richardson, who formerly sat on the town's Zoning Board of Appeals, pointed out that there had been four public hearings on the proposed law and that he heard several times that the town board was not listening. He said, and I quote, and I have to say the town board is listening to many, many voices. There were compromises, end quote. Supervisor Maria Lull said, and I quote, at this point, the town board is charged with voting on a proposed new zoning law that has taken 9 years to draft, 6 years by the first implementation committee, and then 3 years by the current zoning advisory committee, end quote. She thanked the nearly 100 citizens who worked on the comprehensive plan and the committees. During public comment, most of the people in the room did not agree with Lowell for various reasons. A former member of the town's ZBA, John Hinkle, said the proposed laws were more confusing and would be harder for the ZBA and planning board to apply. Several people talked about the laws overstepping and controlling too much of what people can do on their properties. Others had questions for the board, and still others complained about the board's failure to communicate with residents about the changes. The board will hold an information session on the new zoning regulations 6 p.m. Monday, July 8th at the Tri-Village Fire Company on Route 13 in Old Chatham. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper.
Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that a New Paltz businessman has been released after more than 5 months in federal immigration custody. Luis Martinez is a Mexican immigrant who owns the Lalo Group, a construction firm in New Paltz, and the La Charla restaurant in the village. State Supreme Court Justice Nelson S. Roman wrote in the court opinion that, quote, no relief short of Martinez's release will remedy this wrong. The Constitution does not permit the United States government to target people on the streets, arrest them without serving any papers, deny them meaningful due process, and detain them for arbitrary or indefinite periods of time while they engage in fishing expeditions to justify the arrests, unquote. Martinez was brought to the United States from Mexico when he was 12 by his mother. Martinez's mother received amnesty and citizenship, but he, as a child, did not also get citizenship. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
The Daily Freeman is reporting Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro has announced more than $1.05 million in funding from the county's Partnership for Manageable Growth to protect 641 acres of farmland. The acreage is situated on three farms comprising dairy, equine, and nursery production. Molinaro said, and I quote, farmland protection and promoting good stewardship of the land is an important part of combating climate change, and Dutchess County is proud to continue to lead New York State in this effort, end quote. The program provides a locally funded match for land preservation purchases up to 50% of the total project cost. And you can read that full story in the Daily Freeman. David Lombardo is reporting for the Times Union. Saratoga County Clerk Greg Hayner and other county clerks in New York are asking President Donald J. Trump to instruct the U.S. Justice Department to review a new law giving undocumented people access to driver's licenses and to provide a legal opinion as to whether the measure can be challenged in federal court. The letter dated June 24 was sent to Trump by Hayner on the official Saratoga County letterhead and was distributed early June 27th by an Albany public relations firm. The law is slated to take effect in December. Hayner said in a statement, and I quote, for the past 6 months, I've asserted my belief that the New York State Green Light Bill, recently signed into law by Governor Andrew Cuomo, circumvents federal immigration law and forces Department of Motor Vehicles employees and county clerks to break their oath of office, end quote. Proponents of the measure say it will promote public safety, boost the state's economy, and improve the quality of life for undocumented people. Hayner's letter does not include the names or signatures of the 30 county clerks who purportedly signed on to the appeal. In a story published by the Daily Freeman on June 24, Columbia County Clerk Holly Tanner refrained from saying what she will do when the new law takes effect. She said, and I quote, while not in favor of how this bill was written due to myriad issues, I am waiting to see the outcome of potential lawsuits and determination from the New York State Department of Motor Vehicle leadership on how this law, if it stands, will be implemented in regards to points, documentation, verification, etc. Editor's note, Tanner is an active WGXE volunteer programmer. And you can read the full story in the Times Union.
John Campbell, Joseph Spector, and Megan M. McDermott report in the Poughkeepsie Journal that eight women who spoke on the record with the USA Today Network in New York have made sexual harassment allegations against Robert Freeman, who was fired June 24th from leading the State Committee on Open Government after another allegation. A reporter filed an official complaint with the state accusing Freeman of touching the small of her back and her buttocks and kissing the side of her face that led to his firing. The eight other women share similar stories. Freeman would ask personal questions in a professional setting, attempt to get alone with the women, and then would touch them inappropriately and without consent. Quote, he starts it casually so it feels friendly, unquote, said Erica Vladimir, a former state Senate fellow. Quote, let's go on walks, unquote. He loved to go on these walks. And I've talked to multiple people who went on those same walks with him. And then all of a sudden, it's the slow creeping of a hug that lasts just too long, or he is letting you walk through a door before he does it, and his hand is suddenly on the small of your back, unquote. Freeman, since 1976, advocated for transparent government and advised reporters on open government laws. Freeman has not talked to the media since he was fired, but in sworn testimony, he admitted to kissing Aisha Powell, the Journal News LowHUD.com reporter whose complaint led to his firing, as well as sending sexually suggestive emails with a woman he met at Syracuse University, according to the Inspector General's office. Read that full story in the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. Among the issues discussed at the June 12th Kinderhook Village Board meeting was a plan to apply for two grants with the village of Valencia. One grant would finance creek resiliency work along Kinderhook Creek. The second is a revitalization program for areas along the creek in both villages. The village board is also submitting grant applications to replace the water main on William Street and to replace the village water meters. The board also set public hearings on two different matters for its July meeting. One measure would change a local law on parking regulations in the business district and would not require hotels to have off-street parking, as well as change the restrictions on parking near the village square. The parking limit is now 15 minutes. The new regulation would change that to 24 hours. The second hearing scheduled will be to receive public comment on a reduction in the speed limit on a portion of Albany Avenue from 30 miles an hour to 25 miles an hour. The Albany-Hudson Electric Trail will be on the road in that section, with walkers and bicyclists sharing the road with cars. The Kinderhook Village Board will meet 7:30 p.m. on July 10th in the Village Hall. The public hearing will start at 7 p.m., and you can read the full story in the Columbia paper.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts on Sunday there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the morning. 50% chance of rain. The high of 71. Partly sunny skies later. Partly cloudy overnight with a low around 58. Monday should be sunny with a high near 78. A low around 62 with a 30% chance of rain overnight Monday, possibly in the morning Tuesday. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 78, a low around 61. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
On Sunday, June 30th, monthly gentle morning yoga practice, Yoga of the Earth, with teacher Stephanie Fisher, is backdropped by Olana's expansive Hudson River views at Olana State Historic Site in Hudson. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. You can add your own event and hear it right here on the radio by visiting WGXC.org and clicking on the calendar link at the top of the page.
Lucifer is lonely, standing there, killing time. Can't commit to anything but a crime. Leaders on vacation, an open invitation. Animals, evidence. Pearly gates look more like a picket fence. Once you get inside, I've got friends but can't invite them. turn to ignore ya. Don't say I didn't warn ya. All the good girls go to hell, 'cause even God herself has enemies. And once the water starts to rise and heaven's out of sight, she'll want the devil on her team. My Lucifer is lonely. Look at you, needing me. You know I'm not your friend without some greenery. Walking wearing feathers, Peter should know better. Your cover-up is caving in. Man is such a fool, why are we saving him? Poisoning themselves now, begging for our help. Wow. Hills burn in California, my turn to ignore ya. Don't say I didn't warn ya. All the good girls go to hell, 'cause even God herself has enemies. And once the water starts to rise and heaven's out of sight, she'll want the devil on her team. My Lucifer is lonely.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXE 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, currently on summer break.
Woo-woo!
And I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Other bookish things. All that good stuff.
Yep.
We love talking about books.
Yes, we do.
And I have a question for you. Now that you've finished the school year, what was the best book that you read for school this year?
Oh, yeah, I don't think I've chosen a favorite book for this year. Probably The Great Gatsby, though.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What'd you like about it?
I just like the 1920s feel of it. Mm-hmm. It's, like, one of my favorite decades. And I've heard rumors that, like, I don't know, we might be having a 1920s-themed prom since we graduated in 2020. It's the 20s again, just hopefully without the Depression and the Dust Bowl and all the bad things that came after it.
True.
But, yeah, I just like the party atmosphere of it. Although the movie did contribute to that quite a bit, the movie with Leo DiCaprio, so that might be part of the reason why I love it so much.
Yeah, it's very decadent.
But I was into it before seeing scenes from the movie, so it's not all the movie's fault that I love it so much.
Yeah. For those listening, can you tell them a little bit about what it's about?
So it is about our narrator. It's from the perspective of our narrator named Nick Carraway, who has gone and moved to the city to become someone who sells stocks on Wall Street. So he's selling stuff. His cousin is what they call old money, which are the people who are rich prior to the 1920s. He's new money, so he's rich because of the prosperous 1920s decade. And then his neighbor is Jay Gatsby, who is this, like, mysterious figure for a bit of the book, and you learn about him throughout the book. It's, if you, like, read analyses on it, it's supposed to be this grand representation of the corruption of the American dream that Scott Fitzgerald saw when he was writing it, but I just think it's really a really good story.
Awesome. That's one of my mom's favorite classics and one of her favorite books that she read in school. She once told me that it was the book that made her first think of literature as art.
The best part about it was I had two opportunities, one that I didn't manage to take in a completely different class in AP to write about The Great Gatsby, even though it was in ELA. There was an assignment where we had to write like a fictional, a little fake Time magazine article, and I did a review of The Great Gatsby, the novel, because I got the year when it came out.
Oh, cool.
And then I was going to do a historical analysis of a film, but I didn't, it was like first come, first serve, and someone had already chosen The Great Gatsby, and I was very, very sad. So I did The Crucible instead.
Crucible. And you read that in school,
I read
too,
that
right?
in ELA also. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there was a lot of, like, overlapping of classes this year, but I liked it.
Yay. I don't remember what I read my junior year of high school. I think I read Animal Dreams that year, but that may have been senior year. I get those years confused in my memory of high school, and I liked that one a lot. And I'm sure I read some Shakespeare that I loved. But again, I get confused on whether that was Macbeth year or Othello year.
Ah. I've managed to keep my Shakespeare's pretty in order. It was like Romeo and Juliet, Othello, and Hamlet this year. Next year, I believe, we'll be doing Macbeth, I think.
Macbeth is pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's witches and things.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And do you have anything you're especially excited about reading this summer?
Well, right now I'm reading Six of Crows.
Are you still enjoying it?
Yes, actually. I'm a bit disappointed because there are some characters that I'm really into, but this book seems to be more focused on a couple characters that I'm not as into. And it's like they have a lot of characters, but they don't have enough time in the book to cover all of them, which is probably
even
why
it's
the book
a pretty
is,
big,
the
big book,
book is long. The book is very long, but there's still certain characters that I want to know more about. So maybe after I finish the book battle books this year, I'll pick up some of the sequels if I'm still feeling it by the end of the book.
Yeah, I'm curious where it goes from there.
Yeah.
I read that one, but I haven't picked up book two yet.
Yeah.
And yeah, there are. I'm not sure if they're the same characters that you're interested in learning more about, but there were a couple characters that I really enjoyed reading about, but felt like they needed a little bit more.
Well, my favorites.
So maybe it dives more into their stories.
My favorites right now are Nina and Jesper, and they barely get. I mean, Nina gets some covering in the book, but she's one of the ones with more stuff about her. But Jesper barely has anything about him, and it makes me sad.
And for our listeners, could you describe what the book's about?
So it's about these six outcasts who are part of a gang, or at least most of them are part of a gang. A couple of them join the gang during this like heist that they're trying to pull off, where they have to break into a really, really high security prison in another country and break out someone very important for reasons that would be spoilers. But it's because it's so high security, they have to like, it's like almost impossible to break in and also get out, so they have to plan, they have to do all this stuff, and it's pretty good.
Yeah, and of course, it's like a, you know, a usual heist film or story where each character has special traits that brings them to the team.
Mm-hmm.
And they're an interesting group because they're sort of like anti-heroes, and that they're these dark or like characters that aren't perfect. Heroic.
I think I said in the like last show that the main character Kaz, I imagined as like being kind of like inexperienced and like spunky, kind of like Adelina was in the first Young Elites book, but he's actually like portrayed as this really like hardened criminal who's actually like has the potential to be extremely cruel, even though the book says he's 17, so he's my age, and that's really weird to imagine. But yeah, I wasn't expecting him to be portrayed the way he was, so that was a surprise.
Yay. Do you have an idea of which book you're going to read next?
Well, I have One of Us is Lying at my house, so I might read that one next.
That one's pretty fun too. These are all Battle of the Books books. Battle of the Books is a program where teams from different libraries that were in the teen battle, so it's teens from different libraries, form teams and read the same five books over the summer, and then they have a trivia battle in August. It's going to be at Columbia Green Community College this year, and they answer very specific questions about books that is shocking that you all can remember the answers to. Like, what band's t-shirt was this character wearing in this scene?
Yeah.
And y'all are like, David Bowie. Although David Bowie's not a band, but you know what I mean.
Well, singer. That was actually...
I think that was a question.
That was a question last year. It was in The Symptoms of Being Human.
But yeah, if anyone wants to join our team, there's still time. You get five free books, and all you have to do is read them and answer some trivia questions and have fun. And you can come on the radio with us, too.
Yeah.
So you can reach out to me at the Hudson Area Library. And if you're from a different area that's not too close to Hudson, you're still welcome to join our team, but there's also other teams at other libraries, so you could reach out to your closest library and see if they have a team as well.
Yeah.
If that's more convenient. And then we'll compete against you.
Ooh. Maybe we'll interview you this year.
Maybe. Yeah, we do.
We did do an interview, like, show last year. That was pretty
fun. Yay. So I have just started a new book, and I don't want to talk about it yet. I'm going to save it for next time. But I wanted to talk about a cool summer program for people who love audiobooks.
Ooh.
And in particular for teens who love audiobooks, although I'm not a teen and I still enjoy this program too. So it's called Sync, S-Y-N-C, and it is from Audiophile Magazine, and it's a free summer audiobook program for teens 13 and up. It starts in the spring and goes through the summer, and basically every week there's two complete audiobook downloads that you can download for free and keep until you delete them from your device. And usually there's a theme for the week, and sometimes it's very clear and sometimes it's a little more vague. But yeah, so it's a really fun way to get some free audiobooks. They have some really good titles. So starting June 27th, the next two books that are going to be released are Yaki Delgado Wants to Kick Your Ass by Meg Medina.
That was one of our battle books last year.
Yeah, so we've read it and enjoyed it. And I think I actually listened to the audiobook for that one as well. And that one, I can read the little description for it. Yaki Delgado Wants to Kick Your Ass. That's what some girl tells Pity Sanchez one morning before school. Too bad Pity doesn't even know who Yaki Delgado is, let alone what she's done to piss her off. All Pity knows is that Yaki hates her, and she better watch her back because Yaki isn't kidding around. At first, Pity just focuses on trying to find out more about her father she's never met and how to balance honors courses with her weekend job at the neighborhood hair salon. But as their harassment escalates, avoiding Yaki and her gang starts to take over Pity's life. Is there any way for Pity to survive without closing herself off or running away? In an all-too-realistic novel, Meg Benita portrays a sympathetic heroine who is forced to decide who she really is.
That one was pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it. It wasn't my favorite battle book.
No, it wasn't my favorite from
but I still think
either.
It's worth a listen, and I would have been very happy to have had a free audio download of it last summer. And so the second book that will be released on the 27th for a week, available for download for free, is called Heretics Anonymous by Katie Henry. Put an atheist in a strict Catholic school? Expect comedy, chaos, and an inquisition. The Breakfast Club meets Saved in debut author Katie Henry's hilarious novel about a band of misfits who set out to challenge their school, one nun at a time. Perfect for fans of Becky Albertalli and Robin Schneider.
I'm already hooked by the phrase one nun at a time, but okay.
One nun at
a time.
It's
just very intriguing.
Poor nuns. But yeah, so those are just the ones being released for next week. Some other ones coming up that I'm excited about the week of July 4th. One of the titles is The Name of the Star by Maureen Johnson, which I've heard is great. The week of July 11th, there's two sort of biography-based books. One is Becoming Kareem by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which is also read by him. And Vincent and Theo by Deborah Heligman, which I've wanted to read for a long time, which is about Vincent van Gogh and his brother Theo. Then the following week, there are two books, The Go-Between by Veronica Chambers and Kids of Appetite by David Arnold, which both sound great. And then the final week has I Caught a Witch by Nnedi Okorafor, which I've read and loved, and All the Crooked Saints by Maggie Stiefvater, which I haven't read and I'm excited to read, or listen to, rather, since these are audiobooks. So yeah, if you want to check those out, there's a couple ways you could check it out. You could search for Sync Audiobooks for Teens online and find the website, and you could download from there. Or if you have the Overdrive audiobook app, which is what is used by the Mid-Hudson Library System libraries to access audiobooks and ebooks, you can also find that as a library. You can sort of add a library.
Oh, cool.
And access the titles through there. And you can even sign up for a text notification. So I get a text every week that says the new titles are available.
Oh.
And so then it's really easy. I can just click the link and go to the page and download my free titles.
That's cool.
They download right on my little phone. It's fantastic. So highly suggested for folks who love audiobooks and want to try out some new titles. Do you ever listen to audiobooks, Amelia?
Not really. I prefer handheld books.
Yes. Yeah. I like a nice little balance.
I listen to, like, short stories on YouTube sometimes, but those aren't really books. Although some of them have been made into books.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. One particular author has made enough stories that he has his own published book now, so that's pretty cool.
Nice.
But I don't have it. I forgot what it's called.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break for a little bit and play some music. For those listening on Thursday, this is it for this week. But for those listening Sunday or listening to the podcast, stay tuned for a little bit more from us.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm here with Amelia.
Hello.
And we're here every week talking about books. Woohoo.
Yep.
And now for our last little bit of time for today, we're going to read some poems by Joy Harjo, who is an award-winning poet and musician who was just appointed the 23rd U.S. Poet Laureate and will become the first Native American writer to hold this position.
Ooh.
I have a little bio from her. Would you like to read the bio?
Sure.
Why not?
Joy Harjo, born Joy Foster on May 9th, 1951, Tulsa, Oklahoma, is a poet, musician, and author. She is also the first Native American United States Poet Laureate. Born in Oklahoma, she took her paternal grandmother's surname when she enrolled in Muscogee Creek Nation. She is an important figure in the second wave of the literary Native American Renaissance of the late 20th century. She studied at the Institute of American Indian Arts, completed her undergraduate degree at the University of New Mexico in 1976, and earned an MFA at the University of Iowa in its creative writing program. In addition to writing books and other publications, Harjo has taught in numerous United States universities, performed at poetry readings and music events, and released 5 albums of her original music. Her books include Conflict Resolution for Holy Beings, 2015, Crazy Brave, 2012, and How We Became Human, New and Selected Poems, 1975 to 2002. She was a recipient of the Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize, and in 2019, she was elected a Chancellor of the Academy of American Poets.
And I read an article and interview with her in the LA Times, where she talked about the kinds of projects she has in mind for her term as the U.S. Poet Laureate. They included one focused on increasing, quote, the visibility of Native peoples in this country and the inclusion of Native peoples in the story of America, in the poetry story of America. There is an incredible diversity of Native peoples, and we write poetry too, and we're your neighbors, and we walk with you every day.
Oh.
That was nice.
Yeah.
It's lovely when poets do interviews because they're so poetic in their writing. So now we're going to share a few poems by Joy Harjo.
Yeah. I'll go first. This one is called Ah Ah. Ah Ah cries the crow arching towards the heavy sky over the marinara. Let me try that again. That doesn't say marinara.
Over the pasta.
Ah Ah cries the crow arching towards the heavy sky over the marina. Lands on the crown of the palm tree. Ah Ah slaps the urgent cove of ocean swimming through the slips. We carry canoes to the edge of the salt. Ah Ah groans the crew with the weight, the winds cutting skin. We claim our seats, pelicans perch in the draft for fish. Ah Ah beats our lungs and we are racing into the waves. Though there are worlds below us and above us, we are straight ahead. Ah Ah tattoos the engines of your plane against the sky. Away from these waters, each paddle stroke follows the curve from reach to loss. Ah Ah calls the sun from a fishing boat with a pale yellow sail. We fly by on our return over the net of eternity thrown out for stars. Ah Ah scrapes the hull of my soul. Ah Ah.
I like that one.
Marinara, what's wrong with me?
It really changes the feel of the poem.
It certainly does.
All right, I have one called Once the World Was Perfect. Once the world was perfect, and we were happy in that world, then we took it for granted. Discontent began a small rumble in the earthly mind. Then doubt pushed through with its spiked head, and once doubt ruptured the web, then all manner of demon thoughts jumped through. We destroyed the world we had been given for inspiration, for life. Each stone of jealousy, each stone of fear, greed, envy, and hatred put out the light. No one was without a stone in his or her hand. There we were. Right back where we had started, we were bumping into each other in the dark. And now we had no place to live since we didn't know how to live with each other. Then one of the stumbling ones took pity on another and shared a blanket. A spark of kindness made a light. The light made an opening in the darkness. Everyone worked together to make a ladder. A Wind Clan person climbed out first into the next world, and then the other clans, the children of those clans, their children, and their children, all the way through time. To now, into this morning light to you.
Ooh.
I found the poem that made me want to say marinara. The first line of this one is, "The world begins at a kitchen table, no matter what we must eat to live." And that must have just carried over into the first one I decided to read. Okay. So, "Perhaps the world ends here. The world begins at a kitchen table. No matter what, we must eat to live. The gifts of earth are brought and prepared, set on the table, so it has been since creation and it will go on. We chase chickens or dogs away from it, babies teeth at the corners, they scrape their knees under it. It is here that children are given instructions on what it means to be human. We make men at it, we make women. At this table we gossip, recall enemies, and the ghosts of lovers. Our dreams drink coffee with us as they put their arms around our children. They laugh with us at our poor falling down shelves, and as we put ourselves back together once again at the table. This table has been a house in the rain, an umbrella in the sun. Wars have begun and ended at this table. It is a place to hide in the shadow of terror, a place to celebrate the terrible victory. We have given birth on this table, and we have prepared our parents for burial here. At this table we sing with joy, with sorrow. We pray of suffering and remorse. We give thanks. Perhaps the world will end at the kitchen table while we are laughing and crying, eating of the last sweet bite." There was no marinara in that one either. I really don't know
just
why.
Just in your mind.
It's just in my head. I don't even like marinara.
Well, good
that much.
Poetry really brings visuals into mind. So I have one called "Redbird Love." "We watched her grow up. She was the urgent chirper, fledgling flyer, and when spring rolled out its green, she'd grown into the most noticeable bird girl, long-legged and just the right amount of blush, tipping her wings, crest, and tail, and she knew it in the bird parade. We watched her strut. She owned her stuff. The males perked their armor, greased their wings, and flew skyloop missions to show off for her. In the end, there was only one. Isn't that how it is for all of us? There's that one you circle back to for home. This morning, the young couple scavenges seeds on the patio. She is thickening with eggs. Their minds are busy with sticks, the perfect size, tufts of fluff like dandelion and other pieces of soft. He steps aside for her so she can eat. Then we watch him fill his beak, walk tenderly to her, and kiss her with seed. The sacred world lifts up its head to notice we are double, triple blessed."
I believe this is the last one I have. "My house is the red earth. My house is the red earth. It could be the center of the world. I've heard New York, Paris, or Tokyo called the center of the world, but I say it is magnificently humble. You could drive by and miss it. Radio waves can obscure it. Words cannot construct it, for there are some sounds left too sacred, wordless form. For instance, that fool crow picking through the trash near the corral understands the center of the world as greasy strips of fat. Just ask him. He doesn't have to say that the earth has turned scarlet through fierce belief after centuries of heartbreak and laughter. He perches on the blue bowl of the sky and laughs."
Hey, those are just a handful of poems by the new U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo. We found all these poems on the Poetry Foundation website, and there's also a number of books with her poetry, as well as a memoir and a children's book about a cat in the library system that you could borrow. So do check them out. But we're out of time for today, so we hope everyone has a good week and reads lots of good books. Happy reading.
Bye.
Hello, this is Rob Gellis with This Month in History, a chronicle of significant or infamous events in art, science, music, literature, sports, and more that occurred this month either in the near or distant past. On July 1st, 1863, Southern and Northern armies clashed in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. It was the first day of the battle, which ended on July 3rd, 1863, with the defeat of Robert E. Lee's Confederate Army. On July 2nd, 1964, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. It prohibited discrimination on the basis of race in public accommodations, publicly owned or operated facilities, and granted voter registration to minorities. On July 4th, 1776, the Declaration of Independence was approved by the Continental Congress. On July 7th, 1898, President William McKinley signed a resolution annexing Hawaii. Hawaii remained a U.S. territory until it became a state in 1959. On July 12th, 1817, American philosopher Henry David Thoreau was born in Concord, Massachusetts. Thoreau is known for his classic piece of literature, Walden. On July 16, 1769, the city of San Diego, California, was founded as the Catholic Mission San Diego de Alcala. On July 20, 1969, American astronaut Neil Armstrong became the first human to step onto the moon. Armstrong proclaimed as he stepped onto the moon's surface, "That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind." On July 23rd, 1952, Egyptian army officers launched a revolution that overthrew Egypt's monarchy. On July 25th, 1909, the first international overseas plane flight was achieved by Louis Leroux in a small monoplane. He took off from France and landed in England near Dover. On July 27th, 1953, the Korean War ended with the signing of an armistice by the United States and North Korea. On July 30th, 1975, Jimmy Hoffa, the corrupt union leader of the Teamsters, was last seen alive outside a restaurant near Detroit, Michigan. 7 years after his disappearance, Hoffa was officially declared dead. On July 31st, 1790, the U.S. Patent Office first opened up its doors. The first patent was issued to Samuel Hopkins. It was signed by George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. You've been listening to This Month in History, a monthly broadcast of historic events on WGXC 90.7 FM. If you have an event you would like to hear included in This Month in History, email me, Rob Gellis, at info@wgxc.org.
Tell us about voter reform in New York State.
Earlier part of the year in January, the governor signed into law voting reforms that the League of Women Voters has been supporting for a long time.
Yeah, list out the reforms.
Go ahead and list out the reforms. Synchronizing state and federal elections. For instance, primary day. The New York State had a different day for primaries than the federal government. Pre-registration for minors. The legal age to vote is 18.
Right.
Now 16 and 17-year-olds will be able to pre-register.
So and they can vote on their 18th birthday.
Yes. Universal transfer of registration. When you move from one county to another in the state of New York, it used to be that you'd have to re-register. Now your registration will follow you throughout the state. No excuse absentee voting by mail. So right now, you have to have an excuse, a qualifying reason.
Oh, why you can't be at the poll.
Right. So you have to be, you have to show that you're going to be absent
from out of town.
Yeah, that on that day, or you're,
wow,
you have an illness or a disability that would keep you from getting to the polls
on
election day.
But that's no longer the case.
It's no longer the case, except this is not going to go into effect until it requires a constitutional amendment, New York State Constitution. And so it probably won't go into effect until 2022.
Just that one?
No, there's two that require.
Oh,
so
okay.
That one, no excuse absentee voting, and same day registration. So
interesting.
Right now you have to, it has to be 10 days prior to an election to register to vote. Once this is passed and once there's a constitutional amendment for this, you can register the same day that you vote. But again,
exciting.
That's probably not going to happen until 2022. And then closing the LLC loophole. This is kind of esoteric, but it's important. It limits the political contributions for LLCs to $5,000 annually. So this is, it puts them on the same level as corporations. Mm. I think that was a loophole that people could get around that.
Wow.
Maximum
contribution.
And then last but not least, in fact, the most impactful one is early voting. This allows voters in the state of New York to, we will have 9 days prior to election day to vote. Each county is responsible for implementing and executing this plan. It requires for every 50,000 voters in the county, the board has to establish one site our county, Rensselaer County, we have over about 107,000 voters registered. So that would require a minimum of two sites. Now they can do more than two, but
they're required by law to at least do two early voting sites. And that starts this year with this election in 2019?
It will start with this election in November.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, if you go on the county's website, you'll see that they have selected two sites in the county, one in Skodak Town Hall, and one in Brunswick, and Brunswick Office Building.
Skodak and Brunswick. Mm-hmm. What about Troy?
The board has not set up a site in Troy.
That's odd. Wouldn't you think that, I just assume the largest concentration of people are in the city of Troy.
Largest concentration of people, and the not only that, but the New York State Board of Elections has set out a set of standards that the boards have to adhere to when they're trying to figure out how to set up their sites, where they're going to set up their sites. And there are folks in the city of Troy who are really trying to get this site established. Some of the standards that we meet in the city of Troy, we have the highest density of population. That's
right.
One of the standards. We have, of all the towns in that represent the county, we have the most voters. All the sites have to be accessible by public transportation.
Mm.
And that's, you know, that's a big issue for folks who, a lot of folks who live in the city, and rely on public, don't have cars, and they rely on public transportation to get to work or to vote. For instance, to get to the Skodak site, it's going to take, you know, an hour and a half one way by bus from downtown Troy. You have to transfer in Albany. In Brunswick, I understand that there is a bus that goes by the office building there but doesn't stop there. And I know that there's a bus that goes up Hoosick Street and ends at the Walmart, but that would require like a 35-minute walk.
So
I think
those two locations actually don't sound very accessible at all.
For the people, for the folks in Troy
who
rely
on
on public transportation. But I understand that the board is trying to get the CDTA to make the stop at the Brunswick office building. But I understand there are problems. It's going to be very costly to set up these early voting sites. Each polling place now, and think about it, has to have these electronic poll books, and they have to be updated every day, because if you come and you vote, you
don't want to vote again.
To prevent you from voting again, you'd have to be taken off those rolls and marked down as already voted. These electronic polling books are going to cost the county about $170,000 just for the two sites. The total cost, I'm told, is going to be about $300,000 to implement the early voting
option
requirement. Yeah. I know it's costly, and I don't think the state set aside much in the budget for that. So they're trying to work through these problems. But I'm not sure why there's not a site in Troy, because there's already a polling site at the county office building, which is in downtown Troy.
So for folks who are listening who would like a voting site in Troy for those 9 days leading up to election day, is there anything that they can do? Who's making these decisions?
Well, the two commissioners at the Board of Elections. There's a Democratic commissioner and a
Republican
commissioner for the county of Rensselaer. You can call the board and ask to speak with them and let them know that it's important for you to have a voting site in Troy.
I remember reading something about it now being possible for felons to vote.
Absolutely.
Is that part of these reforms?
No, it's already, no, this was a separate issue. In New York State, convicted felons can vote if they're on probation, they're not in prison, but if they are currently on parole or currently incarcerated, they cannot vote. But if they're on parole, they can now petition the governor, and the governor can reinstate their right to vote. I think he's reinstated the vote for many thousands of parolees. So please know that you do have the opportunity to vote.
I'm here at a rally at City Hall in anticipation of a hearing that's been planned around a climate emergency declaration.
Tell me more.
So climate emergency declaration is a resolution that we're hoping that governments around the world can pass that essentially says we're in a state of emergency, that climate change isn't just an issue, it's an existential threat to humanity. And it doesn't live within the realm of, you know, pragmatic solutions or realistic solutions. It lives in the realm of necessity. And an emergency declaration is the government saying, we agree that climate change requires whatever is necessary to address it.
You're coming straight to this rally from court. Why were you in court this morning?
So this emergency declaration that we're having a hearing on today didn't come from people sending letters and, you know, knocking on doors of their city council. That has been happening for years. This came from 62 people laying down in the street right outside of city council and getting arrested in April. And that action was sort of a spark that got a few city council members to realize that there's enough impetus politically, enough people who care a lot about this to move forward on this resolution.
What happened at court?
Well, we got arrested for blocking the street. And in New York City and in most places, that's a pretty low-level kind of thing. And the judge just said, listen, I'm just going to adjourn this and we'll throw it out in 6 months.
So there weren't terrible repercussions?
No, we got off easy, which we expected, and that's how we planned it. And, you know, we don't necessarily believe that winning this fight means that everything will be easy. And we also feel like if we have to go to prison to win this, we would. But we're also trying to make sure that it's possible for people to participate who can get arrested but not necessarily go to prison.
So if someone's listening who cares about the environment and might want to get involved in some way, do they have to get arrested?
Absolutely not. For everyone who gets arrested, we need about 4 or 5 people supporting that effort. We need people calling the press. We need people on the sidelines cheering. We need people helping with jail support. And it's absolutely not necessary to get arrested. But we also believe that civil disobedience gets the goods. If you look at American history, you'll see that some of the most important advances that we made as a society came from a lot of people being willing to break the law.
So is there anything I haven't asked you that you'd like to speak to?
Well, I would say that anybody who sees what's going on and agrees that this is an existential threat to humanity should join the rebellion. Extinction Rebellion is an organization that started in London about a year ago, and it's been growing like wildfire, and it's a vehicle for all of us to get involved in this global struggle.
How can people get involved?
If you Google for Extinction Rebellion wherever you live, you'll either find a chapter there already, or you'll find instructions on how to start a chapter. And there's already several hundred chapters around the world. And we need everyone on the planet getting involved in this, or we're doomed if we don't.
What's your name?
Lorna Mason.
Kyle Pritz.
And why are you here today?
I'm here because I was arrested on April 17th.
What were you arrested for?
I was arrested for blocking traffic, so it was disorderly conduct. We were doing civil disobedience to bring attention to the climate emergency that we are in.
And how about you?
I'm here today to support the people who were arrested on April 17th.
But you were yourself arrested this past Saturday. Is that true?
Yeah, I rappelled down the Port Authority building with another activist in a coordinated effort for people who were climbing the New York Times building to drop banners. So we rappelled down with a banner that said climate emergency, and we wanted the New York Times to see it because this is the sort of language they need to start adopting in their reports on climate change.
And it seems like being arrested is a central part of the actions of Extinction Rebellion. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, from what I understand, and drawing on historical examples of the civil rights movement, of Gandhi's movement in India, and that standing up and telling truth to power and putting your body on the line makes a big difference. It also gets media attention because we want to get the word out. This is a story that's not being told. We are a largely white organization right now, and that is problematic. But I feel like as a white person with privilege in this society and who is treated better by the police, that it's our duty, right, to be there standing up and putting our bodies on the line. Yeah, we don't need to ask the marginalized people to put their bodies on the line. They're already on the line.
Is there anything that you would say to anybody who's listening today who's interested in learning more, getting involved, maybe is up for being arrested themselves.
Sure. So the website is xrr.nyc. Go check it out. There's lots of information there. There's also the Extinction Rebellion London site or international site. They also have tons of great information. And then talk to people in XR. Get connected because it's an amazing, amazing community of people that are doing this. And we're doing it together. It's not just some online sign a petition. We're creating community.
Do you have anything to add?
Yeah. There is some serious power that you give off to other people.